For 20 years, Small Business Digest has helped millions of entrepreneurs grow their business. We do this by highlighting ways they can increase profits. Whether these suggestions improve marketing and provide better financial management, offer robust people management ideas, provide speedier logistics, our guests each offer ways of reducing costs, adding sales, widening profits.
Don Mazzella here again for Small Business Digest. We have with us William Stern. I gather from what I've seen in the press, he's creating a kind of an exciting company in Cardiff. And he'll tell us more about it. But first, we welcome him to the program and say, ask him the first question. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Will.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, Don. I appreciate it. So a little bit about myself. So I was born and raised in San Diego. I went to college in San Diego and ended up moving from Orange County all the way up to San Francisco to work for Fisher Investments. I don't know if you know Ken Fisher. He's always featured on CNBC and, you know, high net worth private client manager, you know, money manager. But anyway, learned a lot from him and then decided at 24 years of age, pretty early on, that I would start my own company. And so moved back down to San Diego. And here we are 22 years later. In April, Cardiff will celebrate its 22-year anniversary. And so I think at the close of this year, we're targeting $12 billion in funding to Main Street. So pretty critical milestone.
But let's stop a minute. What you're really good at is providing financing for small business. Am I correct?
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly what we do.
Okay, we're going to cover a lot. But my next question is, what's your website?
It's www.cardiff.co. So that's CARDIFF.co.
I always ask this question. Where did you come up with the name?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, when Cardiff first started out, we were a one SKU company, meaning we had one product. That was equipment financing, equipment leasing. So if you think of a traditional small to medium sized business, they're leasing equipment like forklifts and trucks and trailers. Well, the first laws of equipment leasing or leasing in general started in Cardiff, which is the capital of Wales in the UK.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, you know. Well, let's back up on another minute and ask a question that in all of our research, small businesses ask, what's the advantage of leasing rather than buy?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for small businesses out there trying to contemplate whether or not they should lease or buy, I think there are a few sort of mental gymnastics, I think, that you're going to want to take into consideration before making the purchase. Now, one thing is right, can the business afford the cash outlay up front? That's probably the largest consideration, right? If a business is wondering whether they should, you know, purchase outright or lease, it's the capital outlay. Can they afford to bleed the company of all of its cash and put it into an asset that really and truly starts depreciating day one? It's like going to the automobile dealership and buying a new car for your wife. And then as soon as you drive it off the lot, right, 20%, right out the door. So the cash outlay part is definitely a large consideration. Now, with leasing, you know, especially with a true operating lease, you don't own the asset, right? You're leasing the asset. And so what you're ending up doing is you're just paying off the depreciation of the asset, right? So the government allows the asset to be depreciated over time. And essentially, that's what you're doing. You're depreciating. Because you don't own it, there are tax laws that benefit business owners. So essentially you write off, right? You deduct that whole payment right? From pre-tax revenue. And so it just allows you to leverage what the asset can do, right? If it's a forklift, it's picking up stuff and moving it, right? Around your factory floor or your warehouse and put it on a truck. But not having to worry about that, you know, whether or not that asset's going to depreciate over time, the capital outlay. Generally speaking, leases come with, you know, great sort of warranty packages in cases if it breaks, right? Something should go wrong with the asset since you don't own it, right? Somebody else has to handle the upkeep. Same with like a Xerox machine, right? In your office. So those are some considerations, right? The tax considerations, the capital outlay consideration. And also, right, will the asset, right, go the way of the buffalo, right? What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is you buy something, it's like an iPhone, right? I've got the newest iPhone right here. Well, what's this thing going to be worth in a year or 2 years or 3 years? Well, nothing. Technology moves so fast. And so if you're worrying about the asset becoming outdated, antiquated, leasing is a great way to hedge that bet. So,
Bill, let's keep talking a little bit about leasing because it is a topic. And after healthcare, it is one of the top topics in our focus group that we find. What are you doing now? And what are the products that people are leasing today?
Well, I would say that, you know, Cardiff has a pretty diversified client base. And I always say that, you know, if one customer takes up more than 20% of your revenue, that's a customer concentration issue, right? Mm-hmm. That's a danger, right? And I learned that early on in corporate finance. I would say that Cardiff does maintain, you know, as best we can, right, through our marketing, down the funnel to our credit processing, and then all the way to our funding. We try our best to keep a diversified portfolio. Obviously, it's to keep the bankers happy, right? You know, the bean counters happy. But I mean, logically, it also makes sense, right? So if you were to stand back and look at kind of the composition of the mosaic, there's restaurants and lodging, right? Hotels. There's transportation, right? Which is like, you know, trucks and trailers, delivery vans, right? The last mile type delivery, right? The stuff that your local Amazon guys are running over to your house. And then you've got healthcare, like you were just mentioning, medical dental, huge component of our portfolio. And then contractors is a pretty big concentration, right? And what do I mean by contractors? I don't mean, you know, large publicly traded, right? Electrical contractors or construction companies. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about blue collar America, right? So the guys that are turning wrenches, that are, you know, hammering nails into drywall, that are, you know, running a paver and smoothing concrete and damn. Those are the types of businesses that we fund in the construction trades. And, you know, to sort of close the loop on your question, what are they financing or what are they leasing? Right? They finance and lease everything. But that's just one SKU, right? That's one product SKU of Cardiff, right? The biggest SKUs that we have, right, are, you know, business lines of credit and term loans, right? So those are probably the most popular, right, sort of products that we have. And it makes sense because with equipment leasing, you got to be ready with, you know, you have to have a product in mind that you want to purchase. And then you got to go out and you got to get a quote or you got to get an invoice. Right? So you have to look at the piece of equipment and touch it and feel it and make sure it's right and compare it against its ilk. And then once you've sort of narrowed it down to, you know, that's the one I want. All right, now you're ready to purchase. That could take 90 days. So for us, while we do offer that product, right, the fastest product, right, we talk about like, you know, the funding sort of approval in minutes and funding same day, right? So if you're a business owner and you're looking for access to capital today, we'll come to Cardiff, right? apply in minutes, get funding same day, versus equipment leasing, where it's show us the invoice, show us the quote, you know, our asset protection department will underwrite the transaction and, you know, see if the asset holds water and, you know, so on and so forth. And then 5 days later, you've got a set of documents that you can execute. I would say if you're a business owner, regardless of whether or not you want to end up leasing or financing a piece of equipment, get a term loan, get a business line of credit, make the purchase, and then after the fact, hand it over to your accounting department, call us back and say, hey, we want to pivot, put this into an equipment lease to take, you know, take advantage of the, you know, the tax incentives. And so, you know, all the industries that I've described, just imagine, right? Walk-in cooler, walk-in freezer, bar, AV equipment, point of sale, landscaping equipment, you know, floor scrubbers, floor polishers, all of that type of stuff, right? Trucks and trailers and everything in between ends up getting financed.
Well, let's talk about it for a second. What do you look for in a company when they come to you and say, I need $40,000 in business as a business loan?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, we try to be as sort of open-minded as we can, right? Cardiff's whole philosophy is we want to democratize access to capital for small businesses. And so what that means, right? Democracy, right? What that means is giving everybody equal access. And since the 2008 financial crisis, I think the majority of small business owners felt locked out, right? So, you know, the real estate market got everybody, you know, it's like America sneezes and the world catches a cold, right? So financial crisis, it wasn't just domestic, right? It affected, you know, governments in Finland that bought bonds. I mean, it affected everyone. And so they had to right the wrong and they had to legislate so that this didn't happen again, right? I think the Federal Reserve governor at the time said it's irrational exuberance, Alan Greenspan, right? It was irrational exuberance. You could get, you know, a mortgage for super cheap and people were doing interest-only mortgage. It just made no sense. Like, you know, you've got a great financial product in front of you. Why are you not taking it? Why are you taking a riskier one that bets on the upside of home values? Well, in any event, we know how that turned out. And so for us, right, going back to democratizing access, then they ended up legislating their way out of these sort of, you know, turbulent times with the Dodd-Frank Act, which basically said, amongst other things, that banks had to keep a bunch of cash on hand. So lending to small businesses is risky. Why? Because not tied to a building or land. Those are two, you know, it's an inconvenient truth, right? Like you want us to lend to small businesses, but they don't have assets that can stand the test of time. Everything depreciates. Well, land and buildings, right? Though they have depreciation schedules, we're talking 30 years, right? Versus a forklift that like, accelerates, you know, with regard to depreciation. I'm getting very technical right now. I hope I'm not losing anybody. But so going back to the, you know, democratizing access, we realized that we needed to have a credit window, right? This big versus most banks having a credit window that big, right? Because no longer can you walk into a bank, you know, extend a handshake with your local banker, fill out an application and walk out with a briefcase of $50,000. Doesn't work like that anymore. Yeah. So no, but it used to. You used to be able to. I remember talking to my granddad and he would say, you know, when I needed a loan for my business, I could walk into my local branch. I could speak to my banker, sit down, tell him what I'm trying to accomplish. And then he would say, yeah, let's do it. That doesn't exist today.
No.
Right? Your local banker is a 22-year-old kid that you know, hopefully graduated high school, hopefully speaks English, you know, doesn't know anything about business, right? Went to a training class to count money maybe for 2 weeks, and now with a suit and tie from Men's Warehouse, right, wants to talk business with you? No, he wants to get you out of his bank unless what? Unless you're making a deposit.
Yes.
Yeah. Or you're opening a credit card or something, you know, some way where they could make interest off of you, right?
But let's talk about Carter for a minute. But do you take into account the individual when you look at a loan?
Yeah. So that's what I was sort of getting to, right? We look at the composition of the company. And so, you know, and there's like 88 data points that we're looking at when we're underwriting a business. I think that's the current number. So essentially what people do, right? We're the largest advertiser of commercial loan products, right, on the internet. So it doesn't matter if you're on Facebook or Instagram, TikTok, Reddit, right? Google, YouTube, no matter where you go, right? We're there. That's achieving omnipresence. We're also in the mail stream, sending out over 1.5 million pieces of mail a month to small businesses, right? And so that's the level of dedication. And how are we doing this? Well, we're trying to target small businesses really under 10 million in revenue. And so we're using all these key data points when we're processing the application. And we're, you know, I don't want to give away, you know, Rao's recipe of marinara sauce, right? But drives everybody crazy, right? But I will say what we weigh heavily are two things. How long you've been in business, right? Right. We'll look at someone if they've only been in business 6 months, right? We'd rather have people been in business 6 years, but we will consider a business with 6 months time of business. The other thing is just cash flow, meaning like, all right, well, you start the month with X. Are you ending it on a better note or a worse note? Well, if consistently you end the month with a positive number, for us, that means you've sort of balanced your business, right? You got debits and credits, right? Everything else is bullshit, right? You know, yes. the flare-ups with employees, the vendors aren't delivering, the suppliers are late, your partners are angry at you. None of it matters. I don't want to hear it, right? We process 100,000 applications a month. Nobody wants to hear stories. You fill out an application, you've got time in business of 6 months or greater, and more than $20,000 in revenue a month, you get a loan. It doesn't mean you get a loan for $500,000, but we'll offer you something consistent with what you can pay back. And the coolest part is we're not transactional, meaning that this is a relationship. And so we hope, right, as your business sort of ameliorates, heals, and gets better and matures and grows, we're going to offer you more access to capital. And we're going to offer, you know, we're going to offer that capital at a better rate. So,
but then let's go to the other side of it. How do you identify when a company is starting to go under?
It's a great question. It's a great question. Don't get in the lending business. That's what I can say. You know, with modern technology, you have greater transparency with understanding the health of a business than you used to. Businesses used to be able to hide, right, the narrative, right, what's going on with the health of their business. You would always wonder, right, as a banker, is the business salubrious or not, right? And so sometimes with businesses, especially businesses that have a banking relationship, you know, you'd submit financials, quarterly financials to the bank, and then the banker reviews the financials and they're financial analysts or whatever, they're reviewing the numbers, they're spreading the numbers, balance sheet, P&L, interim statements. They're looking at everything, trying to make a decision. Well, what's the trajectory? What's the arc of the business? Are things getting better or not? But as you well know, when you're submitting financials on a quarterly basis and they're internally prepared, right? It's not like they're audited by an accounting department. There is a propensity for people to, you know, proverbially, right? Fudge the numbers, right? And so thank God for technology, right? In some ways, right? Technology brings us all closer together. That's the good part. Now there's all sorts of downsides with technology, right? Keep your kids off social media. That's not positive and that's not good for their mental health. But today we're communicating over Zoom. I'm in California. I know you're on the East Coast, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So technology is a great thing when used properly. Well, one such piece of technology that Cardiff leverages is a platform called Plaid, P-L-A-I-D. And so for your listeners, if they've ever used an app called Venmo, right? If you've ever heard of that, where you connect your bank account to Venmo. Plaid is that bridge. Plaid is that bridge that sort of effortlessly connects the two. And so in the same way that, you know, we're doing a Zoom today that connects us, Plaid connects us, you know, with respect to financials. And so it's a clean, frictionless, transparent way for us to understand on a live basis the health of a business. And so essentially it connects, like, what when the applicant applies for financing, it asks them, do you want to connect to Plaid? Because we don't accept paper. Remember the old days? I'll fax it to you.
Yeah,
we don't do that. And then it was like, well, I'll send you the PDF. I'll download it from my bank. And then we realized that people could use what's called Adobe Photoshop and, turn that negative number to a positive number. So we couldn't deal with the fraud, right? You're asking a great question about, like, the downside protection, if you will. And so the best way that we felt that we could fight fraud is with technology. And so Plaid is a great way. It's sort of a gateway to their bank. It gives us read-only access, right? Not, you know, we can't do anything apart from just look at the numbers. And so every once in a while with that technology, right, our system logs in and looks at the health of the business and helps us determine if we want to make a new offer to the business or even refinance their current debt to a lower rate. Because it behooves us, especially in an environment where the government is, you know, buying bonds and lowering rates, right, to create more liquidity, right, in the marketplace. Well, if they're creating more liquidity in the market, that means our cost of capital has also gone down. So in order for us to be more competitive, right, we want to lower rates to make the effective rate to the customer that much more attractive.
Your website again for our audience?
That's right. It's www.cardiff.co.
Okay. And someone wanted to just to talk to you or to somebody. Do you have an email or anything?
It depends. Like for PR, right? If people want to talk to me, they can go to www.joinwilliam.com. So apart from running Cardiff, I also have an executive and corporate sort of entrepreneur coaching program. It's called The Fraternity. Yeah. You can go to jointhefraternity.com. It's essentially, right, it's an ecosystem of small business owners scattered across the world, not just in the US. And we get together over Zoom, right, twice a month on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Pacific time, with a defined sort of curriculum for each month. We were in the 90-day revenue challenge, which was an amazing program, teaching business owners about, you know, important lessons like cross-sell and upsell and bundling and digital marketing. And so, it's a great organization. So if you're looking to contact me personally about gaining entry there, that's jointhefraternity.com. For PR, it's joinwilliam.com. And if somebody's looking for access to capital, of course, I've given the website. But you can also, I'm sure you can contact us via Instagram or Facebook, by phone, by email, right? Just go to the website and get all the details.
Well, what are you, going back, you know, you're sitting there, what are some of the reasons companies fail? You have smaller companies fail that you've run across.
You know, listen, I've been in the business for 26 years now, right? I started in 2001, 25 years. And businesses go the way of the buffalo for many reasons. And I'll tell you a funny sort of story. And I always ask people this, especially when I'm on stage. I think it's a funny way to interact with the crowd. I want you to guess, what was the largest company in America at the turn of the 20th century? So going from the 1800s to the 1900s, what do you think the largest company in America was?
I would have thought U.S. Steel or someone of the steel guys.
That is the answer, but it's wrong. And it's wild to think that U.S. Steel wasn't the largest, right? That it wasn't steel or locomotives, right? You know, and it wasn't, right? The largest business in America at the turn of the 20th century was the American Saddle Company. I don't know who the American Saddle Company, I don't own a saddle. But at the turn of the century, everyone owned saddles. Why? Because horses were the main method of transportation. Why are the brownstones in New York, right? Why are there steps up to every brownstone? Because the smell and the dung on the street, right? They didn't want to have to deal with that. So they're elevated 10 steps up. American Saddle. Yeah, it's an interesting piece of, you know, sort of history. And it's a good anecdote for small business owners. Some, you know, most small business owners are masters of their trade, right? They're, they're plumbers, they're electricians, they're drywall guys, they're product experts. They're not necessarily business owners, entrepreneurs, right? They're what I would call self-employed, right? So as the business grows, they work more and they earn more. But there's a difference between businesses growing versus businesses scaling. And I don't want to get into this long diatribe on what's the difference, but what I will say is blind spots. You ask me, why do businesses sort of go out of business, go the way of the buffalo? The American Saddle Company is the greatest example I can think of, failing to acknowledge that, hey, there's this thing called the automobile. Maybe we should think to diversify, right? They had the capital, right? They had, what's that?
No, keep going.
Oh, okay. Sorry. American Saddle Company certainly had the capital. They could invest in the automobile and they chose not to. So it's, you know, to give you sort of the reasons why businesses go out of business, it's foresight. It's the ability to see around corners and blind spots. It's greed. And I think in sort of that, you know, sort of expanding upon that theme of greed, most businesses run their business like a lifestyle business and not like an enterprise, meaning that they dip into the proverbial piggy bank to finance their lifestyle. And as their business grows and as their income grows, so grows their lifestyle. And that's the danger. It's that hedonic treadmill that you can never get off of that, you know, really is this false idol in America, which is consumerism, right? I need more, I need more, I need more, I need more. But you're never, you know, satiated.
Yes.
And it's a problem, right? Because it is a false idol, right? And I tell business owners all the time, in the sort of exchange of human interaction, the most valuable asset that can be traded amongst humans is time. It's not love, right? It's not, you know, there's so many, you know, so many ways that you trade between humans. Certainly not money, but it's time. Why? Because time you can give and never get back. And that makes it the most valuable asset, right? So for most business owners, right, blind spots, see around corners, look at what your competitors are doing. Don't ignore technology and AI in your business, right? You know, be cautious of your costs, right? Give employees more responsibilities, not less, right? Let AI run sort of, you know, sidecar, if you will, to help that employee be more productive. I'll tell you a quick story before we end things. You open up a history book today and you look at what it was like in the Industrial Revolution, let's say in the 1850s in America, right? And you look at like what New York City looked like, whatever, Bronx, doesn't matter the borough. You've got manufacturing in a big warehouse, right? And this is sort of pre-union, right? If you will, right? Samuel Gompers and all that. And so you've got people sewing something, right? And they're doing it all day, right? With no air and dim lighting and their backs are hurting, right? And we're looking at people now pictured from those times going, look at those work conditions. Well, I promise you, in 150 years from now, people will look back at us looking like monkeys at a keyboard and going, that was their work condition?
Mm-hmm.
That's how they made a living. This is terrible.
You're absolutely right.
So the lesson is, right, like, do more with less, create more freedom for yourself as a business owner. And remember, that's why you went into business. It wasn't to have a name tag that said owner. It was to have the freedom to decide how you want to spend your time, right, with your family. That's the reason. That's freedom.
So absolutely.
That's my message today.
One last time, your website?
www.cardiff.co.
Well, Bill, it's been a very enjoyable time together. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you.
Don Mazzello here again for Small Business Digest. We have with us Jason Cosina today. He's going to talk about two things that I'm very interested in. Why Skype is no longer with us. And more importantly, he's going to give us some insight, hopefully, on where things are in the digital world. So, Jason, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, Jason, our first question to everybody, yep, though, is give us a little bit about your personal background and what you're doing. And the second one is what you're doing now. And okay, the third question is a website so people can learn more.
Oh, sure. So, personal background, in the 90s, when I was going to school for engineering, I kind of fizzled out of it because I wasn't producing things as fast. And really the thing that happened was the internet came around. So I got excited about the internet early 90s, and I've been working in the internet ever since. So that's kind of where I took my science and technical thinking and just going, I've never seen such a big change that happened with the internet. So I work with marketing directors and business owners to help them use the internet. Our company does a ton of PR and advertising and those types of channels as well. So I cut my teeth working with companies like Cargill and larger companies, working with their marketing directors, learning how it works. I've taken a lot of those pieces and kind of streamlined products for small businesses, specifically on the internet. That's our best in market product line, where we're trying to find, you know, like, if you want to be the best, whatever it is, tree trimmer, or we take a look at the specific market that you're targeting, what comes up number one in search there, what are they doing, how often are they posting on social channels, and try to kind of give you a landscape of what's happening out there. Let's see, what was the third one?
So your website.
Website is publicity.com. So our company, over the years, we kind of grew on we used to have a model, we still do, a performance-based PR model, where customers would give us the money, put it on account, and then we would go out there and pitch. And if it was the Today Show, then it would be a larger, you know, cost to get the Today Show. With traditional pitching and PR, it's not like buying ads, right? Mm-hmm. But it certainly has that air of trust. You get trust from a third party endorsement, that type of thing. So Earned Media is where we grew. And then I always had the digital arm. So when internet came up, started building websites, started doing social media, started doing email marketing. It seems like the industry is where it went, where we had like four channels in the past, you know, big channels, you know. Like I said, mentioned the Today Show was something that was big, or whatever the national TV shows were. But now it's much more segmented. So you can get right down to the tiniest sliver. There's a million people posting content. So it certainly changed the way PR works and that type of thing. Our domain name, Publicity, did I say that? Publicity.com? That's it. Publicity.com is our website. So.
Oh, really?
We got into the domain name stuff early. I remember sending faxes out at the time. Okay, this is going to date me a little bit, but that was one of our channels was a mass faxing and telling people to get domain names. And people said, what are you talking about? Leave me alone, you know. But publicity.com is certainly one of those ones that we got for ourselves. So good domain name speaks to what we do. So now we're not just Earned Media getting people placements. We're also helping them work with smaller media channels, do advertising, website, search engine optimization. Now AI is floating into it. So a lot of work with, that's kind of set a fire under us, you know, from a marketing perspective, if people are thinking that they can just type into a machine and it's going to do their marketing for them. So where is it going for my industry? But we can chat about that down the road too. But.
Well, let's go to me, one of the most interesting things. Why do you think Skype failed?
Skype failed. Yeah, that is, if you're like me, I'm driving to work. I don't know how, it's been a few weeks now, but I'm driving to work and I hear that it closed. It's like, everyone's working from home. Why in the world would this brand go away? You know, so it just shocked me a little bit. That's what really incited me to focus on that, this article and talk about it. Some of it could be Microsoft purchased them and, you know, they're kind of mirroring Google, where Google's got their suite with Zoom, or not, I'm sorry, not Zoom, but Meet and Google Docs and all that. So Microsoft kind of just let it go. They stopped talking about it. They stopped marketing it. Main thing is, you know, when you're getting into these situations where the market seems unstable or people aren't sure, you know, a fair number of people pull back on their marketing budgets. So I was just saying, you got to keep telling your story. You know, I think you told me, we're just going to keep going. Let everyone else figure it out. Keep going. And I certainly have that same approach too.
But, you know, a lot of people just use Skype. I mean, they have, what, millions of users. And why would you let that audience go?
That's a question for Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft purchased them back in 2011. So I really think it's a good example, though. If you stop telling your story, you stop getting out there, people are going to go to something else. There's always a hole in your bucket, you know, as good as if you're the best servicing of your customers out there, there's still a hole in your bucket. You need to add new customers in. So when you're not out there telling your story, getting found, people are looking elsewhere. So,
as I said before the show, we just had a focus group of small business people. We were doing them periodically. And the interesting thing is, they, to a man or a woman, they were all ignoring the president's tariff or everything else and focusing down on the fact that you know, each of them in their different industries had to keep going. They hadn't cut their marketing budget. They hadn't cut any of the budget. They were clearly watching the sales. But where do you think things are going now?
Specific to marketing, what's happening up there? Everything?
Let's start with marketing, because the digital starts with there.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think, like, when this article was up, it was like, it was during trade and things, and people were, you know, the stock market goes down and people start to fear things. I think what's happening now too, almost more than that, is AI. How is AI going to pan out? How is this going to work for my industry? What am I doing today to be found? Some things that we're seeing, our customers that are always ranking very well, we're doing search engine optimization and their rankings in the top 10 for thousands of keywords, their organic traffic's going down, you know? So that's a change that's happening. Even though they're ranked well, I think it has to do with the AI incorporated into the results for Google. Gemini's AI right at the top of your Google results are now pulling that data. It may be doing things like pulling out the people looking for just information, or, you know, the non-shoppers. But still, you're feeling a drop in traffic and people are asking questions, you know.
Google says its traffic dropped about 25% in this last. But to me, the real question about AI, I mean, I just saw today in an article where some company said it anticipated dropping half of its sales force over the next 5 years because of AI. Well, I'm sitting here saying, how do you replace a human being with a machine? I mean, I'm still I'm old fashioned enough.
Yeah, I think there's definitely like there is interpretation of what it can do, and then there's what it can really do. And I think that a lot of times people see these beautiful videos being produced and they're like, oh my gosh, it's going to replace everything. But I would urge you to go try it. Try to make a beautiful video with AI. And what I think it is right now, and I'm kind of banking on it to some extent, is it's providing people that understand a particular industry a tool that they can use. So if you know how to produce videos, the AI tools are going to help you, you know. But if you don't, you're not going to be able to jump in there and do it. So I don't know on that. You know, where I see it working the most is business owners don't have a lot of time. It's a great tool to help them get organized and request work. But there's still a value, like even content producing. I wrote something recently. It's like, don't use AI to write your marketing letters. But use it so that you're still can save time to get all your points in order, you know, to write a nice request for an article to be written. And that's kind of how I'm seeing it now, where it's helping marketing directors, business owners put together a list of tasks to do, but someone's still got to do it. You know, so where is it going? I don't know. I am not at that point where I see it replacing the workforce. I'm with you. Maybe I'm just the old school too, where it's like, you can have it give you all sorts of bulleted lists.
But I saw another one the other day was someone said you could use AI to shift through your sales for the last 20 years and determine right down to almost the block or the individual who will buy your product. It could do what you can't do, which is look at every single order and come up with an answer. But yep. I don't know.
I think there's a lot of value to that. Like if you use a product like HubSpot, you can integrate it right into ChatGPT and then have it like you're doing that type of analysis. And I think it's good for those tools. Again, if you have some understanding in the market, you know, in the industry or whatever you're working in, you'll be able to spot like I don't trust ChatGPT if there's errors in it or, you know what I mean? I don't trust it to be perfect. That's for sure.
Well, I have to tell you that this one that I heard three months ago, it used to be in the toy industry that you never had a green toy. You never did a green toy. That was a mantra. Long story how I know that. But it's a mantra. And if you look, toys aren't green. You didn't think about that, huh?
I'm trying to figure out why they're not green.
but somebody at Mattel, no, not Mattel, the other big one.
Hasbro.
Hasbro, did a study using AI. And really? What did AI come back and say? Green is the least favorite toy for purchase. The least favorite color. So you never know.
Well, I remember I had G.I. Joe back in the day. You know, that was before AI, I suppose.
Well, no, that's but again, that's camouflage. But that's
That's interesting. I think there are definitely some tools like that. We so much of what our focus on right now is on how to get into it. So I don't think that I'm that far like an innovator. Like I'm definitely above the curve. I'm not a laggard. You know, I'm using the tools. I'm a heavy user of the tools. And that number that you said for Google is a big indicator. Like I no longer use Google. A lot of people think I'm like in the past think I'm smart because I know how to search on Google and find answers, but it's no longer my first go-to. ChatGPT or something like that is. ChatGPT recently. So like things on that, you'd want to make sure that you're not blocking those robots that scan sites so that you're getting in there. Traditional media, podcasts, getting sourced from other places. We do these visibility studies where we take our clients and their competitors and see how visible they are when people are typing in the AI channels. And it'll show us A, are they even, do they even know they exist when you ask a question? Or if you ask a specific question, how are you ranking? And then it shows us what sources they're using to get pulled into the AI. And that's how, where we connect it back to a lot of traditional media, or obviously your website needs to be indexed in a way that is clean, but it's not that different from search engines. E-commerce stuff, you know, you want to make sure that you got your structured, I might be talking too technical now, but your structured data on your products so that that's what it uses to get in there. And then just like Google Shopping, ChatGPT is coming out with a feed so you can feed your e-commerce products into ChatGPT. Because a lot of people are going to start using it for shopping and help me determine, you know, or they'll create their evoke set, like here's the two brands of dishwasher I want to buy, right? And then have ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini or whatever the tools that they're using help them determine which one I should buy. So it's a new place to be found.
Well, let's go back to something you said, which I think is very important. You talked about structuring your product. Because up until about 6 months ago, I hadn't even thought about that. I'll tell you that. But can you explain to our audience how that works and why it's so important?
Yeah, so structured data or structured snippets you might hear people talking about. It's like if there's product reviews, if there's product sizes, all the additional detail about your products are stored in scripting. And that's what these engines use to index your site and look over the things. So they're even more important now with the AI tool sets. How do you implement it? You know, if you're using a Shopify or WordPress for your store, we use products like Yoast, and it just automatically adds it on there for you. So it's all set up in structured data, it's called. It just provides all the computers that are scanning your site more details in a format that they are used to. So does that make sense?
Yes. But yes. A robot comes on your site and is going through it, and does like come out of storage and says, "Oh, we also are good at widgets or whatever."
Yeah. Well, it does it. Yeah. How do you get those messages in there? That part of that is by continually like setting up a content plan, first defining your messages, right? That you want these systems to pick up, and then setting up a content plan so that you're posting it to multiple channels. I would say, like I mentioned, getting in traditional media is a good way. I work with several coin sites too, and we're finding that AI is reading paid sources, paid media sources. So those are another one. You know, like if you ever see a top 10 list on money.com or something, it's oftentimes a paid placement. But those are getting sourced by ChatGPT as this is how they know about this company. And this is why they know they're the top 10. So there's paid options that are available too, to get that message out there. But the idea is make sure your site's saying it and then get it on other places. Reviews are good too. Get that review loop going. So I don't know why I keep going to tree trimmers. I used to trim trees 30 years ago, but when they do a project, have a final process in your kind of whole sales process that when the client is happy, send them a link to make a review on Google. If there's one piece of technical piece, if you have a local market that you're targeting those Google business listing, it's got to be the most, I put it right at the top of the list to make sure you're doing, if you're targeting locally, you know,
right.
If you're targeting like on, we have two product lines when it comes to this. One is best, we call it best in market, where we just kind of do an analysis of a specific market, meaning you're a tree trimmer and you work in southern metro of this city, right? Or these are the cities you target. That local business listing defines your service area. And then that'll make you come up higher within that service area in general search too. So that business listing is very important. I'm probably off topic a little bit there, but.
You bring up a point. Do you ever do the authors?
Authors as in?
Book authors.
Oh, do I work with book authors?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, we work with book authors. Book authors are always good. We like, so I would say that about 50% is digital work that we do and 50% is PR work. And if you want to get a, you know, picked up by a media outlet, having a book gives you credibility, and it works well with our tool set to have a book when we're doing that. So we definitely do work with those. I would say typically the books would be more of a, you want to be found nationwide, right? Not necessarily local wide deal, but yeah, we definitely, and then put together a content plan. I mean, we have a book, The CEO's Guide to Marketing, that we write, and a lot of it's just for training our staff so that we can communicate with each other. And it defines our processes as far as getting that communication plan defined, getting your target markets, what's your target, or what's your market segmentation strategy. Let's define your brands or your product lines, and then the messaging for each of them. All those pieces make it so that it's easier for a business owner to hand it to someone else to help them do it, so they don't have to do everything. I think that's something that they struggle with, is they have it all in their head. They know who the company is, but is it written down in a way that can be repeated? And oftentimes when we talk about marketing, it's like, it's not a flat message where you write it on a piece of paper and it gets decoded by your customer the same way that you said it. You know, like, what did you can define what you said, but can you define what they heard? So it's a process to making sure that you're getting that messaging right, so that they're decoding your message in a way that still leaves them with the message you want them to have about your company. So
what we found is a lot of small business owners don't know what their business is. They're successful, but really it's almost as a byproduct.
What I see, the biggest mistake I see is they think that their product's for everybody. You know, my product works for everybody. It's the best out there, but they might only be working in a service area. You know, that's one way to define your market. Well, no, you only service this area, but that's why that decoding part, it all kind of ties to it. Like, defining who you're targeting for that messaging is better than just saying it works. Works for everybody. Well, no, it probably doesn't. Let's think about it some more, because in today's marketing, it's very segmented. There's thousands of different, millions of channels that people can use. And if you define who that person is better, you'll have better results from your marketing.
Yes.
You know, so that's my number one mistake I see business owners. They just think it's the best product for everybody. Whereas I think that, let's think about it some and get it defined more, because it's going to make it picking channels to use so much easier, defining that message so much easier, all those pieces.
Well, let me throw one out at you, which came up yesterday. The market for plant-based foods has shifted. And if anything, the actual volume of plant-based is actually down this year than last year. Because no one seems to know why.
I'm going to look into that. So plant-based is down. Doesn't make sense. It seems like it should be, if anything, going up.
Yes.
You're saying compared to meat-based, or right?
Oh, okay. Yes, as a percentage of the marketplace. But for instance, in the fancy food show that comes up in a week and a half, the number of exhibitors in the plant-based field is down from the last 2 years.
I'm going to talk with a couple. That's just interesting to me. I would say 50% of our business is from nutraceutical companies and that type of work, where we're doing, whether it's a fiber supplement or what are some of the other ones? I can't even, lycopene, or so many that we work with, that someone here would have some insight for that. You got my mind turning on it. I'm like, why would that be? It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. Again, could be wrong, but I just saw the figure. What got me started is I always go to the fancy food show And I happened to be talking to the one of the people at the show, and she said the number of exhibitors of plant-based is down. Now, it could be because of consolidation in the industry, but you turn around, and there's always somebody coming up with something new.
Yeah. I'm going to have to, and I wonder, it could be some production, could tie into where we started this whole thing, you know? I look at it like Israel was a source for our tomato extracts that a lot of external companies come to us because they want to target the U.S. market, mm-hmm. whether it be plums from Australia, they have an extract from plums that they're using, or it's, like I said, tomato extract from Israel, or honey extract from Israel, or I'm just trying to think of all the different. A soluble fiber supplement out of Japan, you know. So I wonder if, I don't know. I'm just throwing. Now I'm just guessing or speculating, but I'll have to think about that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's because it does run contrary to what I would think would be where.
And I've been wrong in my life before in my life too. But like I say, what I was based on was two factors. You know? There was a Wall Street Journal article about one of the big companies that's now third. I can't believe it's Meat or whatever. They had a big article about the fact that it slipped to number three in the industry. Before, that's the only thing you ever saw was that brand. Well, personally, I can't. I don't know about you, but. There's just too much, they throw too much seasoning into master taste for me.
Yeah. It's like an Outback versus a high-end steakhouse or something. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, Outback's great.
Me a steak anytime. we have just a couple of minutes left.
Sure.
What would you like to talk about and talk to our audience about?
Yeah, I think that it would be, number one is visibility is survival. Get out there, stay out there, you know, especially when the market is in turmoil. I think it provides a lot of opportunities. It's not, you know, and I do agree with you, like small business owners are just going heads down one way or another. You know, we're still moving. So keep that going. Be cognizant of new channels and how they may affect you, whether it's AI or some of these other ones. Understand your messaging. Think about it. Do a competitive analysis. Look at what your competitors are doing. I always say marketing is played with your cards face out so everyone can see what you're doing. What other advertising channels are there? What keyword possibilities are out there? That's something we provide for our prospects, you know, a competitive analysis, just a little one, just seeing, are you visible in AI? And how many posts are being made on Facebook? And what are the types of content that you're putting out? So I think get a handle on that. If you have your messaging down first, it'll be easier to either hire within or bring someone on to help you do marketing. If you have that, just the basics of marketing defined for you. Who's that target market? What is that? What do you want them to walk away and telling their friends about your company? You know, the marketing basics are still important. And I think that's something that's solid no matter, because technology and all these channels are always going to change. But I still think understanding human nature and your marketing message and who your targets are is important.
Your website again for our audience?
Publicity.com.
Okay. Now that's a great one.
Was I telling you about that mass faxing? Was that back in the day? That was one of the channels that we used, was mass faxing. And it was just like, get your domain name today, we told them. They laughed in our face. Well, we got publicity.com at least. That's the company's media relations agency, and the domain name is publicity.com. So. And we do digital marketing and PR and advertising. We do a fair amount of stuff for small businesses too. So I love working with manufacturers. That's one of my favorite groups to work with. typically a good sized company, but they need help on their back office, you know, so we often step in and help them keep all those things moving and help them with all the different technologies that are out there, as far even down to tracking. And instead of stopping marketing, reevaluate what you're doing, you know, have someone take a look at it. I think that's a good practice to go through if you're concerned about the bottom line and that thing, you know.
On that note, Jason, we have to cut. Goodbye. But thank you for a very, very enjoyable half hour. Good. Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you so much.
You have been listening to Small Business Digest. Our website is the number 2 SB Digest. Go there to hear this and all past and future shows. And tell us of a guest you would like to hear on this program. Remember, this show is about helping our audience improve profit. I'm Don Mazzella, and thank you.